This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Even as the economy recovers, some Americans are going through long-term unemployment. And that is a historic change for a group of workers we will discuss next. Statistically, the recession hit men especially hard. They had a lot of manufacturing jobs that went away. And some of the hardest hit are white men, guys who may have thought they were the backbone of the American workforce. To be clear, they're not the only group suffering here, but they're the group we're going to talk about here because it has NPR News analyst Juan Williams looking at a recent historical parallel. Juan, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Who's been through this story before, the story that seems to be affecting white men now?
Well, if you look back to the end of the 1970s, start of the 1980s, it's black men. Black men went through a period in which they saw a historic leap in terms of unemployment rates, especially older black men who were up then, you know, by about 83 to about 12-13% unemployment. And that's also the period when you saw a tremendous expansion in terms of young black men experiencing record levels of unemployment. This was during the course of that recession.
Let's remember that historic period of time. There'd been the civil rights movement. There'd been improvement in union. There'd been a spread, rather, of union activity. There were a lot of blue-collar jobs for African-Americans for a while, and these are the jobs, manufacturing jobs, that went away as the economy shifted drastically in the early 80s, right?
Exactly right. I think, you know, if you wanted a sort of an icon at this moment, I think people might think of Michelle Obama's dad, you know, as someone who was working in a boiler room in Chicago, hardworking guy, able to support his family, able to be a good dad, able to send his children to school. That moment in terms of black American life is something that I heard about in a recent conversation with a top White House official who was saying, you know, you look at that period and that you can trace then to the development in terms of not only high unemployment, but out of wedlock births, absent dads, crime, drugs, deterioration of so many communities. That was a tremendously crippling period for black American men, and one that they really haven't recovered from, even as we go forward, because, you know, black unemployment remains very high right now.
I feel like you're telling me the backstory of a lot of the news stories that I remember from the last 25 years when you talk about higher crime and rise in single motherhood and so forth. So now you're focusing on white men, one of the groups here that seems to be going through a similar retrenchment, to suffer serious suffering, loss of manufacturing jobs. What are some of the possible effects of that?
Well, I mean, the effects now, and I think this is what the White House is picking on, the effects are quite similar in terms of increasing rates of out-of-wedlock births among white men, increasing rates of absent dads, lower marriage rates, and the consequence it has for family formation. This is a moment when all of a sudden you see white men who experienced half of all the job losses since 07. Countries lost 8 million jobs, half among white men. And when you think about blue-collar white men in specific, blue-collar white men who are about 11% of the workforce lost over 36% of all the jobs. So when you add that to the idea of the average length of unemployment now being at a historic high, more than 31 weeks, what you're seeing is white men going through something very similar to what black men went through a long time ago, and it having the same consequential effect on sociological issues, and I might add on politics.
Well, let's talk about the politics. What are some of the political effects as best you can judge them?
Well, if you stop, let's take something like the Tea Party movement in this country right now. There's a lot of anger at Wall Street bailouts, at stimulus packages that did more about public sector unemployment than private sector unemployment, specifically manufacturing and construction, where these men lost so many of their jobs. But in a recent New York Times poll about the Tea Party, for example, it said two-thirds of the men who identified as members of the Tea Party, of the people, I should say, who identified as members of the Tea Party, said that the recession had caused them hardship or a major change of life. Mm. And 41% of white men, remember, voted for President Obama in 08. Now his approval rating among white men is down in the mid-30s. And those are people who say they are now less likely to vote for Democrats in the fall. So part of this, I think, is tied into what we see going on in terms of American politics. People who feel that this administration may be looking out for Wall Street, may be looking out for the poor or immigrants in terms of health care reform, but not looking out for them.
Juan, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Steve.
That's NPR News analyst Juan Williams.
The unrest in Greece over austerity measures aimed at pulling it from the brink of bankruptcy has turned violent today. At this moment, the finance ministry and at least one bank are burning. Tens of thousands of protesters are in the streets of the Greek capital, and three people have died. NPR's Sylvia Poggioli joins us now on the line from Athens. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
It sounds like from just what I've said that it's pretty out of control there in Athens today.
It's a little bit less now because after these street battles with the police and demonstrators, a lot of people have been dispersed. There are still some sporadic fires, small fires in bins and shop windows in the city center. But yes, it was a pretty chaotic mid morning, early afternoon. The demonstrations really started quite peacefully. There were a lot of people on the street, perhaps as many as 100,000. They marched. They were quite angry, but the first part of the rally was really, really quite peaceful. And then some people dispersed, and then a group of young people. We don't know if they were organized anarchists, but they certainly were organized, ready for violence. They came prepared. They had face masks. They had bars with which to pry paving stones from the streets. They taunted the police, and after a while, the police responded with tear gas, stun grenades. And from what we understand, a Molotov cocktail was thrown at a branch bank nearby, was set on fire. Three people died, two women and a man, and four people who were seriously injured have been hospitalized.
Now, how representative are these demonstrators, would you say, of Greeks as a whole? Because, of course, many Greeks have been out in the street demonstrating over these last weeks.
I do not think that they are representative of the majority of Greeks. I've been here now for more than a week, and I've been talking to an awful lot of people, and I think I see a lot of anger, but I see also a great deal of resignation. I'd like to point out that on Saturday there was also a very big demonstration, and very peaceful until then. A group of black-clad anarchists came, and they started smashing windows. And what I saw is a lot of normal Greeks getting very angry about the violence. So I do not think that today's riots are representative. But, you know, it is the first test for this government that has just announced these very, very austere measures, wage and pension cuts in the public sector, hikes in consumer product taxes. So it's we have to see now. We haven't yet heard from the government reaction to what had happened. But tomorrow the parliament is expected to pass the law enabling these measures to be enacted.
Just finally, Greece is in big financial trouble. And even though today's demonstrators might be a fringe version of the demonstrations, you know, a lot of people wonder why Greeks are so vehement to keep pensions and other benefits when the country is in so much trouble that by Western standards might be called gold-plated.
Well, you know, actually, Greece is not alone. Even Germany has a pretty solid safety net, not perhaps as generous as the one in Greece. The one in Greece was definitely swollen. The public sector is huge. Something like one in three Greeks work in the public sector. It is really over the top. But you know, unions have been strong, and there's a strong sense that they were entitled to these privileges.
Sylvia, thanks very much.
Thank you, Renee.
NPR's Sylvia Pagioli joined us on the line from Athens. Doctors who treat Medicare patients will face a huge pay cut, 21%, unless Congress acts by the end of this month. It's the third time this year that doctors, seniors, and lawmakers have faced this issue. Just about everyone agrees that such an abrupt change in payments could have devastating effects. NPR's Julie Rovner explains.
What worries people most about the possibility of such a big cut in Medicare payments to doctors is that it will produce more people like Janice Jessup. She's a Medicare beneficiary in Virginia Beach, Virginia. The last time she needed to find a new primary care doctor, a couple of years ago, she says she called doctors all over town.
25, 30, 40, something like that, an awful lot of doctors.
And what did they tell you?
They weren't taking Medicare patients anymore.
Jessup ended up going to a walk-in clinic where she got the immediate care she needed.
But it isn't the full medical attention you need with a primary physician. You know, no lab tests or anything.
From the doctor's point of view, however, it's not hard to see why they're getting more and more reluctant to take on new Medicare patients.
We haven't had a raise in 7 years.
Joseph Stubbs is immediate past president of the American College of Physicians, which represents more than 100,000 internists. He He says as professionals, doctors feel a strong sense of duty to continue to care for their patients, even when profits erode. But at some point, the balance will tip, he says, including for his own group of 9 doctors in Georgia.
We're having to face, well, if those cuts go into effect, we need to cut personnel. It will cost us, instead of reimburse us, to take care of Medicare beneficiaries.
And Congress has now made matters even worse, Stubbs says, by delaying the cuts, not a year at a time, but by only a month or two. That's left physicians wondering what their income might be and what to tell patients. Stubbs calls it chaos.
What business could deal with not knowing whether your price is going to be up in the next month or the same or be cut by 21%? It's no way to be able to plan.
So how exactly did we get here? Well, the problem dates back to a law passed by Congress in 1997. John Rother is with the senior group AARP.
Well, I think it's good intentions gone awry. The intent was to limit what we pay doctors to a sustainable growth rate, SGR.
For the first couple of years, the new limits worked pretty well. Doctors actually got fairly generous raises. But then the limits started to bite. In 2002, they started calling for cuts in doctor pay. Congress let that happen the first year, but then it worried that if the cuts continued, doctors would stop taking Medicare patients. So lawmakers started voting to make the cuts go away, at least temporarily. Only there was a problem. Budget rules meant that canceling the cuts added money to the federal deficit. And the longer the cuts got delayed, the bigger the price tag got.
Each year, the threatened reduction is so unmanageable that we can't even figure out how to pay for it.
That led Congress to shorten the delays from 2 years to 1 year and now to a month or two at a time. But while it's a real emergency for those involved, Rother says the problem hasn't registered much on the national radar.
So it's really hard to explain and really hard for anyone to understand who's not in the middle of it.
But those who are in the middle of it, like the American Medical Association, are furious with Congress for letting it get to the point where whether or not doctor pay will be cut is decided on a month-to-month basis. James Rohack is the AMA's president.
From a fiscal standpoint, when they say, well, gee, we can't do it because it will add to the deficit, well, the reality is every one of these temporary patches has grown the deficit. They could have fixed this 3 years ago for less than $50 billion. Now it's over $210 billion. It'll continue to grow as they don't deal with the actual formula.
But the doctor's proposed fix, to repeal the current formula in its entirety, isn't a good solution either, says Rother of the AARP.
We don't want to just remove all limits on what doctors can charge. That's a good way to get to bankruptcy.
So the search continues for a new system that would pay doctors on Medicare fairly, but neither too much nor too little. That search has, so far, been elusive. And Medicare patient Janice Jessup did finally find a primary care doctor late last year, but she doesn't know if he'll continue to see her if this latest round of cuts takes effect.
I'm afraid to ask. I just bless him for taking me.
The latest delay in the cut expires on May 31st. Julie Rovner, NPR News, Washington.
The government is coming out with one of its most closely watched economic reports tomorrow. The monthly unemployment report is a snapshot of the job market and an indicator of how well or how poorly the economy is recovering from the deepest recession in decades. To find out what we can expect, we turned to David Wessel. He's economics editor of The Wall Street Journal and a regular guest here on Morning Edition. And let's begin with the predictions. Is unemployment going to go up or down?
Well, when the numbers come out on Friday, we expect good news, but kind of not good enough. The betting among forecasters is that private employers added somewhere between 175,000 and 250,000 jobs in April. That's including the temporary hiring for the 2010 census. That's a little better than March. Might be enough hiring to bring the unemployment rate down a little bit, but it remains very high, 9.7% at last count. And that means there are 15 million Americans who aren't working and looking for jobs, and even more who've given up looking.
Who has been hardest hit by this really terrible job market?
Well, Renee, the unemployment rate is highest among young people and among minorities, as is often the case. But what I find the most arresting fact is this. One out of every 5 men, 25 to 54 years old, isn't working. One out of 5. They're either looking for work or giving up looking for work or collecting disability or collecting pensions or just getting by on the kindness of their families. I mean, that's a remarkably high fraction. It's not all because of the recession. There's been a steady decline in the share of these prime-age men who've been working for decades, but it plunged during the recession as industries that tended to employ men, construction in particular, manufacturing, were hit particularly hard.
Well, what about women then?
Well, the share of women who work rose in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s and into the 90s. Fewer women still work than men, and the share of prime-age women with jobs fell, too, during the recession. But women actually got hit less hard. It turns out that they tended to be in industries where there were fewer layoffs, like healthcare. And also, over the last several years, more and more women have been getting college educations, and that turns out to be one of the things that makes workers desirable to employers, even in a downturn like the one we've had.
Well, looking ahead then for men and the sort of change in their situation, when the recession is truly over and the unemployment rate drops to something one hopes resembling the level before the recession, say 5 or 6%, will the jobs return for the men?
That's the troubling part of this story. I find it quite alarming. Larry Summers, the president's economic advisor, said at a conference the other day that he anticipates when we get back to something like a normal economy, instead of having one in five prime-age men being on the sidelines, he expects it'll be one in six. That's better, for sure, but not very comfortable. The recession seems to have accelerated a pre-existing condition in the economy. There are fewer good-paying jobs for men without education. And the well-paying jobs in the middle that sustain the middle class, construction, factory jobs, probably aren't coming back soon. Now, faster economic growth will help. It's essential. But it's just not enough to bring down this really troubling amount of unemployment among these men who we used to consider the breadwinners of American families.
David, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
David Wessel is economics editor of The Wall Street Journal.